I had my tail whooped the last two races out here.
Yeah? Just with how well Marcus is running, or what?
Yeah, with the air conditions, the way they are, the nitrous car just runs really good, and the supercharged car struggles. And
yeah.
To be honest with you, the nitrous car has just been running good, and it's all the way up this race, it was kicking my butt, too.
Well, and I know this isn't this class is far, you know, the furthest thing from easy. But what you guys have done here of late, and you know, Marcus winning the last one, obviously you winning this one, and going back to last year and everything, it's almost like you've made this look easy in a sense. Well, I know it's not, but
no, it's definitely not. We always try. I always race by the mantra that. Don't ever let them see you sweat.
Yeah.
So what appears to be an effortless performance is coupled with a tremendous amount of effort and work behind the scenes to make it look seamless when you get to the racetrack. 90% of winning is done in the shop. So when we show up and we run like we have the last several outings, it's just because we've been working hard in the shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it takes a group effort. It takes a lot of smart people and to do this. And racing in this time of the year, is hard anyway with the radio. I mean, it's hot. Don't make any power. You have to really change a bunch of stuff to run good. Everybody continues to ask me, like, oh my goodness, you went 355 last night in 2,000 feet of air and 135 grains. What's it going to go when it's wintertime? And the answer is not a lot faster because things that you have to do I know it seems like it, but the things you have to do to make the engine make power in this air, you have to undo when the air is good. So when you're really doing your job, it shouldn't run much different in the bad weather and the good weather. So yes, it's going to go faster, but it just shows that we made a lot of good engine and supercharger decisions going into running in bad air.
I mean, it has to show that you've gotten pretty much, I mean, in conditions like this, you've gotten as much out of this car as almost humanly possible, it seems like, right? I mean, it seems like...
I don't know what you could do to that thing
to
make it run any better than it did in the final. Like, that literally was one of the... We rarely... I always run it really hard, but that's one of only three or four runs we've ever made where it was a complete kitchen sink. Know that it's not going to be able to run again, blow it up. I mean, we destroyed everything in that thing from the front to the back on that run.
Really?
Literally, I am not kidding you. There was so much smoke inside the car by the 330. I made the entire run looking at the retaining wall, and I just maintained my distance from that wall to know where I was in the track.
Wow.
I did not see where I was going until after I had turned off of the racetrack on the return road.
Wow.
It burned the U-joint out of it, tore up something in the drivetrain, knocked the rear seal out of the Liberty, burned the engine up. You know, it was a full blown get it all type of run.
but that's almost what you have to do. You know, against Marcus, the way that car is running, the way you guys have tuned that car. I mean, that's obviously it needed every bit of that.
Well, it's for me. It's a double-edged sword. It's an advantage and a curse.
Yeah.
Me and Billy sit beside each other. Billy hears me talking to Marcus and telling him Billy knows I'm going up there to run 56 in Marcus's car, and I missed it by a mile. I was trying to go 56, went 57 with a zero. Fastest we've been was 58, 300 feet better air.
Yeah.
So, like, it's easier in the sense that Billy has a target to shoot at, and it's harder in a sense to know that you got to go do something that you ain't done yet. And, you know, it's just a perfect storm.
Yeah.
Rarely in motorsports do you get this combination where you have two cars that are tuned by the same team that race each other and absolutely race each other.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of the fact that every time me and Marcus go up there, it's me against Billy and it's me against Marcus, and we race both cars as hard as they'll go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, for sure. What's and just in a class like this, for you guys to have met in final rounds so many times, you know, dating back in the last year or whatever, how satisfying has that been just for not only you, but for this whole operation, Marcus, Billy, everybody?
It doesn't get any better than that. And we do that by, that's design now. That's not by accident. I do everything I can do to qualify those cars on the opposite sides of the ladder.
Right.
I promise you, I don't want to run that nitrous car with my blower car.
Yeah.
My blower car cannot outrun that nitrous car. And we got away with one last night. It was 22 thousandths down there. But I promise you, over the course of time, the nitrous car is the superior combination right now in Rover's world. And over 10 runs, you're not going to outrun it seven times.
Yeah.
So, like, we have struggled, but seem to do a pretty good job of getting them on the offside ladder.
Yeah.
The nitrous car would have absolutely been number one qualifier in this race if I'd have made two more runs with it. I made two more qualifying runs with my car just trying to make sure it didn't end up fourth. It finally ended up running it at midnight and didn't go to the top. But if I had run that nitrous car two more runs, I think would have went 53 or 4 out there.
Okay.
And there's no way to outrun that with a blower car at 135 grades.
Right, right.
But it's very satisfying to answer your question. When you roll up to the finals and it's just your team in the finals, I know everyone wants to win on both sides, but for me, I have won and I have lost. I have been on both sides and so has Marcus. We always hug each other before a race, and we always talk about before the race how we already won the deal. As long as nobody else gets to leave with the trophy, it's just dividing it up whether he gets it or I get it. I'm just as happy to see Marcus win as I am. You can ask Marcus Burton. When we turned off the track, he turned off in front of me. He gets out of the car, I'm getting out of the car, and I am literally cursing out loud, mad. He thought he done hit me or his shoe had done got wrapped up in my car. He's like, what's wrong? What'd I do? Why are you mad? And I was literally that upset that he didn't beat me because I'm tuning that car.
Yeah.
So what that means is Stevie Fast as the driver won and Stevie Fast as the tuner lost. And it's a weird mix of emotions, man.
Yeah.
It was after the winner's circle at this event before I was actually happy.
Yeah.
Like, it was after the winner's circle before I was like, okay, I'm going to enjoy this. Cause I was so pissed off that I got beat by Billy. Because I talked a lot of shit to Billy for the last 3 days. I was like, it's nitrous weather. I am going to beat your eyeballs out. Like, I'm going to wear you out. Like, every single run, I'm just laughing at him. And if you keep poking that grizzly bear, especially when it isn't his equipment, he's like, I'm going to blow your motor up. I was like, let's see what you got, big fella. And it's a fun deal.
That's good.
Billy's the best that there is in this business.
It's super cool just to, and I've talked with Marcus about this several times, and especially after he won a couple months ago in May at this same type of event. But seeing you guys have become, we work together, friends together now, which is about as far apart as this relationship could have come after where you guys were a few seasons ago, not liking each other at all. That's pretty incredible when you think about it.
Well, it all comes down to respect.
Yeah.
That's how any relationship is formed. You can't really be friends with somebody if you don't respect them. We have, and I think not just in motorsports, but in the world right now, we have a lot of misconceptions about what people are by how we hear about they are, and how we read about they are, and the perception that we have on the internet about how they are. And, my dislike and disdain for Marcus Burton was about something that I had read about him and something that people had told me about him. And things that I had heard when we used to grudge race each other and try to rip each other's head off, we didn't really know each other. I just thought he was an arrogant prick, and he thought I was an arrogant prick, and we just went at it. Well, when you get to spend some time around somebody, more often than not, you'll find out that they have a little bit more substance and character, and that 90% of the bullshit that you read or hear about somebody on the internet isn't true, and you develop a respect for somebody's work ethic. And relationships, all relationships begin with respect. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for that guy and for his team. Marcus is I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do type of guy. He's one of my customers that I never had to worry about his word. His word is infallible. And I try to surround myself with people like that. If your word is good, we have the opportunity to have a relationship. If your word's not good, I write you off and you're done.
Yeah.
So it is incredible that we went from him paying me $10,000 in pennies and change to me doing everything I can to defeat myself with his car.
Yeah, that's pretty unbelievable. And seeing how this run has gone for you guys in RVW, it's this is, nothing that you guys have to apologize for by any stretch, but the class has obviously being ruled by you both now, so much so that, you know, guys are leaving the class, going to 275 and whatnot. Is this good? Is this, you know, what you guys want to continue to do, or, you know, is it bad for the class, or is that, you know, that's not your concern, I assume, as a racer?
Well, no, absolutely, it is a concern. I helped build this class. I was one of the first cars in this class. This class and drag radial racing as a whole is my baby.
Yeah.
So it is not healthy for the same people to win all of them.
Right.
We need other people and other teams to step up and start beating us, or at least attempting to do that. The mass exodus out of Radio vs. the World is fueled by more than just us winning a lot. It's really hard. It's really expensive. And a lot of teams just simply want to win. And the easiest thing to do that is to just continue to step down classes. So what we need is some men to step up and run cars where they belong and take some lumps and figure out how to go faster than what they went 5 years ago. You know, when you have somebody that steps down because they can't afford to run that class, I'm all for that. Like, believe me, I want to run Top Fuel, but I'd much rather run a well-funded Radio vs. the World car than to run a broke Top Fuel operation.
Right.
So I get it when people have to step down. But if you haven't made progress in your program in 5 years and went faster than you did 5 years ago, 500 pounds lighter than you used to be, then you got to kind of look in the mirror on that. With that said, as a racer, I'm not going to allow anybody to defeat me for the help of the class. We do need people to step up. Radio vs. the World has always been an elite class. It's not a tire-kicking class, and it wasn't designed to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
The car count that we have now is largely dependent on economic factors. I mean, it just simply costs a lot to run one of these cars, and the more you run them, if you try to run one of these cars 6, 8, 10 times a year, you'd struggle to do so. It just, the maintenance on the thing is just out of control. So that's a factor. But we've got some fresh blood coming in Radio vs. the World. We have people building new cars,
mm-hmm.
and I'm optimistic about the future of the class. I don't know that anybody will look at 2020 and say that this was a growth year for any sport, not just motorsports.
Right.
So right now, I feel like we're just trying to get out of this deal with our, you know, with our shirt on our back. We have promoters like Donald Long and Ozzie Moya and Maria that are putting on these races. Like, I know they're not making money at these races, and they know going in that they're not making money at these races. They are doing this for the health of the sport,
mm-hmm.
and they need to be recognized as doing that, as them caring enough about our sport to stick their neck out there to say, okay, we're going to – I think Donald told me he made like $2,000 or $2,500 at the last event, probably didn't make any money at this event. But to have people that are going on there and sticking their neck out for the health of the sport, for the longevity of the sport, that needs to be recognized.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
you know, you've got a lot of organizations that are just like, nope, we can't make any money at it. We're just going to hold up, wait. Well, that doesn't do good in motorsports. I mean, we have a lot of families that depend on our sport going and running to put food on the table. And I appreciate it. I'm very blessed to have some people that are willing to stick their neck out to give us a place to race, just like I stick my neck out to put on a show every single event.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. One last thing just about the weekend. It seemed like you just kind of, you know, as weather conditions, you know, or as the night went on, you were able to creep up on it both nights and run better as the evening went on, you know, Friday and Saturday. Were you pretty pleased with just kind of how things went in that regard?
It looks like we were creeping up on it. I promise you we were not trying to creep up on
it.
Like, it just won't freaking run in 135 water days. So when we unloaded in Q1, it went 64. I'm like, okay, we got this thing. I promise you in Q2, we were going up there to run 59 or 60.
Yeah.
And the damn thing ran 63. And I'm like, oh, shit. So, like, okay. So I was like, all right, when we sat out Q3, because I was making a bunch of changes. Everybody's like, yeah, you're waiting for the air to come to you. No, I was not. I was working on trying to figure out how to go faster. When we hauled that thing up there for Q4, I was trying to go 56, and the thing goes, like, 62.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So it's looking like we're in this controlled 1 to 200 to run, and we're just not making big enough changes. I mean, we are we're really swinging at that thing. Now, the nitrous car is the opposite. It ran exactly what I was trying to run with it. It makes big power. It's got big steam. It went 67 in Q1. That was a grudge race. Yep. And I thought that was a really good run for that session. And then I hopped it right up and went 63 and then into the 50s. But that supercharged car at 135 grains, man, it's a pig. So, but I was pleased that we did not abort a run with either car all weekend. When you have a weekend where the car goes down the track all the time, that's how you know you got your T's crossed and your I's dotted. Sydney and Jeff Miles and the staff at Orlando Speed World has that track on absolute kill. For a 130-degree race surface and us be able to run 9 flat 60-foot, that's a freaking killer race surface. So when you can go down the track all the time, I mean, I don't know if you've watched a lot, but there wasn't a lot of sorted-out race programs spinning the tires even in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
You know, you had way more wheelies than what you had tire spin, and that's a testament to how good the track was.
Yeah, absolutely. Very true, very true.